This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Well, it's welcome to Book Lovers Wairarapa. I'm Gareth Rapson, and I'm with independent book owner of Elmo's. I'm with city councillor, the man everybody wants on their quiz team, Steve Lawrence.
It's very kind of you to say, Gareth. District Council.
District. We almost got there. We're bringing you the wonderful world of books. We're the bookies of, is that the right word, the bookies?
Yeah, it's a good word.
I mean, it's an old word, but anything to do with books and literature and writing, and actually that's where we're going to begin with writing, because, Steve, it's been, you've had the superstar of New Zealand writer, the writing, the Ockham winner, the... why word?
Ingrid Horrocks, yes.
How did that go?
Went really, really well. We had a big crowd. The room was about as we can get it. Ingrid was really, really good. We were a bit lucky, I guess, in that, I mean, we put our program together kind of, hopefully, by January. And all our troops had... met Ingrid down in Wellington towards the end of last year, jacked her up to do the, if that's the word, organised for, invited her.
Yep.
To be the invited writer for July. And about 3 weeks before then, she won the...
When's the big gone?
Won the Ockham. So...
And is wealthy and could helicopter in now. You know, it's just so good. But what I was interested in was the fact that there was a great article by... Erin Kavanagh Hall,
yes, she did
in the midweek.
Yeah.
Terrific interview and also a picture of the cover.
Yep.
What do you think of the cover?
Well, I like the cover because it's – I'm quite focused on covers.
Me too. And it's New Zealand artist?
Yep. But also you can read the title.
Yep.
And it's a – it's a ting. And it's quite intriguing.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. The angle of the portrait is, and it's about woman's stories.
Yeah.
So no, but just stark and to the point. What I liked about it was she's a Wairarapa product. Grew up in
Mickey, yeah.
Yeah, and in reading the article, I learned that she went to a creative writing course when she was 16 in Greytown, and that launched it all. It didn't. But mind you, she was helped. Mum was an English teacher, and I think Dad was a writer. So
he
she had a,
John, yes.
Yeah, had a had she had you know thing. And then it was a creative writing course at Victoria with Bill Manhire, and away it goes. Mm. What did she talk about?
Well, she talked about her book, which is good. I like it when people do that.
And did she have her editor here? Was there, is it Philippa Taylor?
Philippa Tucker.
And well, Tucker, yeah.
Philippa is an editor, but she's one of the volunteers at Y Word.
Ah.
And they had a conversation.
Right.
Philippa's, she is assistant editor or something at for a magazine called Shepherdess. She also has written some books.
Rather her speaking, it was like an interview.
It's an interview.
I love that way more than just a... You know, one person speak, unless they're really good.
Yeah, we've tended to do that. And then she read some bits, which is quite good. It's really, I always, one of the things you get out of going to author events when they read some of their stuff, it comes out the way they meant it to. You know, was when you're reading something someone else has written, you don't really know where to put the emphasis and what it more means. And
she was a good reader?
Oh, yeah. No, she's really. Yeah. Really engaging.
I haven't read it yet. I mean, it is. Is it a book for women?
Not really.
Oh, okay, because our book club,
yeah,
of which us guys are losing 5-4.
Okay, because clearly, four of you and five of them, you'll dominate easily.
No. We are dominated, but I noticed that it's appeared on our book list for next year.
Yeah,
we're going to all read. Ingrid. And I think we're all going to get assigned a chapter that we have to unpack. A story, yeah.
Because I think I think there's nine of them.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
And so we unpack one each. But But just shows you, us guys, we take one, you know, for the team. We did do Flesh by the Zolze, whatever how you say it's his name. So we looked at masculinity, but this time we're going to Ingrid next year. So looking forward to that. But we have a huge program for you today. Absolutely. I'm looking at the world's biggest stack of crime.
Crime.
All right. And I have a lot of non-fiction and odds and ends and bits and pieces.
Before we do that.
Yes.
Let's talk about this coming Sunday.
Sunday.
Which is the August Y word.
Yes.
So it's National Poetry Month or week. Anyway, National Poetry Month, I think. Anyway, so Helen Rickaby, published poet, and I think she's won the Ockham as well a while ago, is coming along. We also have, and I think we should do more of this, but we'll have an open mic or a...
Are you going to bring your guitar, Steve?
No, but people will be able to come along and say their poems, and I think that's quite a good thing. We should need to do a bit more of that.
That's very, very good. It expands the, gives you a terrific variety. And also, people write their poems. They often don't get a chance to, they're not going to get published necessarily, but the poem might be a real cracker. Mm. And so an open mic is a chance for a small audience. And who knows, Philippa Tucker might be listening and, you know.
Philippa will be listening, I mean she will be.
Okay.
Repeat that again.
That's next Sunday. That's early August. That's like second?
The second, yeah.
Yeah.
So the first Sunday can be anywhere from the 1st to the 7th. In fact, it could be the 8th, I think, technically. No, it has to be the 7th. Anywhere in the first 7 days.
Excellent. Looking forward to hearing about that next episode of it.
So Helen will be there. She's been to Booktown and things. So,
okay.
Published by Auckland University Press. A couple of books she's written.
Perfect.
We'll have some for sale. Yep. Anyway.
I'd like to start in the, you know, on the bookie part of this that you and I do by the listener's book special.
Right.
What a fantastic, you know, addition from the listener team. It's absolutely great to see our number one magazine highlighting books.
And they are very kind to the book trade, the listener.
Yeah, no, and I mean, they always have a lot of reviews, but give basically a whole edition to, which they must realise that we are a nation of readers and there's an audience for this. Just looking through they had a terrific sort of winter warmer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these covers I've seen in your shop.
Mm. It looks like the new Colson Whitehead, which we've just got, which I could have brought along here, but forgot.
I'd like to hear about that, actually. I've read the first one, missed the second one, but they say this third one is excellent. And it's what I'd like about it was it gives a little bit on the bottom line. They always have an article about how the businesses, how the New Zealand market is going. Mm. They were saying this is the year of the memoir. They were highlighting that. You know, Brad Thorne, Barry Soper, Barbara... Is it the
Drever? It's a year of the journalist memoir. We've had a lot of
Charlotte,
Glenny,
Kelsey Waghorn.
Well, she was. She's not a journalist. She was on White Island when
Elizabeth Knox.
Terrible pictures in there.
We're not going there. Just Cinder. Sold 22,000 copies.
Mm.
You know, is that in New Zealand?
There were a few sold internationally.
Well, there's a lot sold internationally, but I got a feeling that could be which makes it one of the best, most best selling books ever. Five of the top 10 of New Zealand books at the moment are biographies.
Mm.
Nigel Latta's Lessons on Living sold 11,000 copies.
Mm. I'm not sure that's, would you call that a biography? Perhaps not. It's a
self-help bio, really.
Yeah,
a bit of a combo. This is the Nielsen's book scan. They tell us that nonfiction sales are up 4%. All nonfiction, there must be New Zealand nonfiction, is increased. All nonfiction has increased. The New Zealand fiction for adults has dropped a little bit. The Chidji's 6,000 copies of her latest.
Yeah, there hasn't been a big, big one.
Yeah. New Zealand children's titles, it says, are kind of they're just flattened on a sort of graph of progress. So it's not, there's nothing that's really torn it apart and gone right up. It's, so that's the creative nonfiction, like London Falling. I noticed that was in the bookshop. Keen to read that.
Yeah. Why would you call that creative? I mean, it's nonfiction.
It comes in this category of creative nonfiction, where it creates a kind of novelistic style of telling the story. But really, it's all about Jacinda. But
it looks like a novel too. I mean, it's got a kind of a novel cover.
Yeah.
And it's not till you read right down the bottom where it says nonfiction that you know. Oh.
And look, and to have a graphic artist, you know, highlight books. All that. I mean, us.
It looks like someone's style I know.
Yeah, it is. Sarah Lang.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She's.
She wrote that graphic novel about Catherine Mansfield.
All right. You've got a copy of this, haven't you?
No.
I'm giving this to you at the end.
Oh, that's
kind. Because, you know, this is a must read. True Love Conquers the Market. Now, you know, the rise of the romance writers. Are you into selling these people?
Well, we have them on the shelf. I can't sell them because how can I tell someone, you know, it wouldn't matter how long this book was in my house, even if it was the only one. There's no way I'm opening it.
Right. But there is a market for it.
Oh, hell yes. The whole bookshops that don't sell anything else.
Yeah. No, and the covers look.
Well, that's the problem. They're all the same.
Yeah. Then the covers look kind of scary, but there are people who want to read that.
Yeah. Oh, hell yes.
A great article on Zelle in the...
He's your man, isn't he?
Yeah, in the city, Sex in the City, book clubs in Upper West, New York's Upper West Side, how you pay for your moderator to run the book club session. So you don't just let the members do it. You have a person who's really, really knowledgeable comes in. That is a terrifically funny article about... And on all the books that they choose to do.
Well, it's the Americans get other people to walk their dogs as well, don't they?
Armageddon is coming, and to the bunker, what books would you take? And they've asked a lot of worthies around New Zealand, literary people, what were the books they would take? Funny. I mean, what a great picture of penguin books, you know, getting shoved there, the door shoved. And then just endless reviews. A book that I'll be reading pretty soon, David Eggers.
Oh, yeah.
Contrapesto or something or other, which I see right on your front desk. Yeah. Excellent edition of The Listener, and just applauded by Steve and I as must reading. We're going to go over now and take the first of our big crime fiction books.
Yeah, well... We were talking about this before. It's been bloody cold. And I had a council engagement on the Carterton High Street on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock at the farmer's market, trying to get people enthused about giving us their thoughts on what we should put in the long-term plan. And I got home about 10:30, frozen. So yes. I thought, well, I'm just going to sit by the fire and read a book. So this is a reading copy of a new, well, it's not even new, it's not out till October, Ian Rankin. Now, Ian Rankin is a crime writer, Scottish, who's wrote, I don't know, about 30 books about John Rebus.
Are they Glasgow settings or Edinburgh?
They're Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, okay.
Yeah, Edinburgh, I'm pretty, yeah.
Were they filmed? Were they
there's modern. I'm not sure.
I keep getting them mixed up, like Inspector Morse.
Yeah,
he's a different guy.
I think they've been turned into something.
It's probably
Rebus is a hard drinking, really on the edge of being corrupt not for his own purposes, but, you know, not above making the Lord do what he wants it to do.
A little.
I know he can get the bad guys. And he's followed his career over 30-odd books until the last couple were after he'd retired.
I know passionate readers of the, of
who
can't wait for, you know, it's like their yearly treat. Yearly treat? Once a year?
There's probably one a year.
Yeah.
So he started really young because he's still not very old. I remember the last, who was it? I can't remember her name. But there was a woman crime writer, written lots of books, and then she died. But she's 98 or something, and she's still churning them out. Whereas he's
Trisha
probably
Cornwell or someone like that, you know. But
No,
I know the one. I know the, there is one of those grand old dames. But what this is a
standalone book with a. I suspect it might turn into a new series. So the main character is a woman called Gillian Gish. She is a detective sergeant. This is set in London. And it's about a... It's got a lot of characters in it. It's about a uber luxurious high-rise, 18-story high-rise with only two apartments on each floor.
Right.
All these incredibly wealthy people, all slightly dodgy, and then the concierge is found dead.
Okay, and there's a lot of suspects.
And it's quite a – it's complicated because there are a lot of suspects. You've got your red herrings. It turns out there's actually –
I was going to stop you there. There's not too many spoilers, but
– there's actually more than one crime.
Okay.
One crime led to the other.
So these masters of the crime writing, they're at the top of their game. They know what buttons to push for us readers. I'm impressed that you nailed that in a couple of days, or was it that good?
Well, I read it from started about midday, I suppose. Read it while I was watching the Tottenham Auckland game with one eye. And then I finished about 2 a.m.
So well, there you get it. Like if Steve's willing to, you know, put an afternoon into it and nail it,
it's incredibly antisocial.
But no, it's the weather. That's our winter warmers. Yeah. It's just the right time to read a book.
The interesting thing I'd just like to talk about is his writing style.
Yep.
Because we have his brand new character. It is a vague allusion to the fact that she might be slightly attractive. That's the only description of her or anybody. You've got no idea what anybody looks like.
So you create her in your mind.
Yeah.
With the little details, yeah.
Yeah, and there's one person, one of the residents, who's obviously quite short because he has two very tall bodyguards. Apart from that, you don't know what anybody looks like or anything about them.
See, this is the difference from an American writer.
Yeah.
I mean, the detective or the police, you know, DI is an incredibly attractive woman,
yeah.
You know, who's going to look good on the TV adaptation of it.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That's a style point.
There's hardly an adjective in this thing. You know, it's quite spare.
Well, that's sort of flesh, which we just were talking about just before. That's like that too. It's sparse, stark. I mean, Hemingway gave a lot of that sort of stuff. And you've got in your pile over there James Ellroy. That's another one that's stylistically stark, which is interesting. But anyway, this is your hot tip, I would take.
Yeah. So this is Ian Rankin, The Heights, and that's what the name of the building is.
Okay.
So it's all about the building, really, and the rich and powerful people in it. And there's a really intriguing, at the end of it, there's just an acknowledgement. It says, with thanks to Liz and Justin for the notebook, ...
Oh.
So it's kind of a suggestion that
could be True.
There may be some aspects of truth in here.
Except for that they kept a notebook on the...
Yeah.
Intriguing. So now, that's...
So on the basis of that...
That is your book of the week.
So I just brought along a whole bunch of...
You have. I can see an impressive thing.
So
we're going to have to actually rattle along. The Gum Trees of Kerikeri. It's not often I review a poetry book by Lynn Jenner, but I saw one of her poems in The Listener, and then I got a volume of it, and prose poems, the size of a paragraph, read nicely on all sorts of things. And poem 13, that's the name, there's no titles for these poems, they're just number 13. Here we go. During their week-long stay at our cousin's Airbnb cottage, the couple from Whangarei asked for a new roll of cling film, a roll of tinfoil, and a packet of Ziploc bags. No guest had ever asked for these things before, and we had some discussion about what these people were going to need, why they needed doing so they would need so many wrappings, and whether it was reasonable to expect hosts to supply this kind of them. In rating their experience, the couple from Whangarei said their stay in the cottage had been just the retreat they needed, and they had given them a chance to make memories. We think they baked their memories in the oven, waited for them to cool, rolled them in cling foil film, and then tin foil, and took them home in the Ziploc bags.
either that or they were mass murderers.
The Gum Trees of Kerikeri by Lynn Jenner. Delightfully whimsical and funny, and just a terrific collection of poems. Okay, over to you.
All right. Well, I'll just... So the first four I've got here are all New Zealand authors.
See, the one thing, your table where you have these crime fiction thrillers is very full.
Yes.
Where are these boys going?
These ones are going with the New Zealand fiction.
Oh, of course, on their separate, on the left as you come in, on the bookshelf. Oh, yep, excellent. Continue.
This one is slightly, I mean, it's written by a man who's calling himself Alice Blake. But if you go to the back about the author, it says, Blake was also known to law enforcement as Ben Sanders.
Oh, yeah. I've read his books.
Yeah.
He's a Ben Sanders.
Yeah.
So is this an American reason?
Yeah.
Because he wrote those great, great crime thrillers set in Auckland, and then he started to set them all in the United States. They're good.
Though No Prison is a Sanders' ninth thriller and is first written under the Alice Blake pen name. He lives in New Zealand with his partner and their daughter. But this is set in the United States.
Okay.
And you can kind of tell from the cover...
I like Ben.
It looks like Montana or somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, Rockies.
Yeah.
So it's on the West Coast, maybe. But because it's a New Zealand writer, and he's got a really good track form. So
we've just got it. I don't know much about it at all, apart from.
Why would you change when your name is so good? You know, Ben Sanders is kind of like a trusted, reliable, good writer. Why would you come up with?
I don't know. J.D. Robb and
maybe just wants to become better alphabetically a little earlier, you know, rather than the Sanders just up on the E's. And
maybe it's just a different lead character, or
maybe you could email and ask him.
You should ask him.
Yep.
The suspense is as tight as a snare drum. I couldn't put it down. We talked about that line before. What's as tight as a snare drum? The suspense or the?
he couldn't read it because he was holding the snare drum. Excellent. Okay, Ben Sanders, but actually Alice Blake.
Moa Press, which is a division of Hachette. So,
okay, excellent. Jumping over to me.
Yes.
Te
Araroa.
Good that you can pronounce these things. Walking New Zealand's 3,000-kilometre trail. Now, I read Naomi North or South to North or something. Naomi what? What can we recall that? Anyway, well, this is a woman who started from down south and did it. The walk. Most people walk it down. She walked it up and wrote a book, which was a good read.
Because it's uphill, isn't it?
It is. But yeah, walking in the Southern Alps is the first part, right? Is against, you know, gadding about all the way through. Anyway, Mark Watson, a photographer, walked it, and he took 6 months. But what he took the gear. He took like a real camera and tripods and filters and all the stuff. And so you get this beautiful, absolutely stunningly cool, which I've seen at Elmo's.
Yeah.
And great little coffee table book to pick up. There's a little map of each section and then just superb calendar standard photos all the way through. Nice text, would be absolutely the go-to book if you were going to walk the trail, just for the art feel about it. And what a overseas in that section where people are looking for overseas adventures, this would really draw people in. Stunningly good book.
I've told you Elmo's history with the Te Araroa Trail, haven't I?
No, you didn't.
Well, very early on, not long after we opened the shop, they opened the trail, and we got some stock in of the guidebook. And somehow or other, we got up to the top of the Google listing for guidebook to the New Zealand Trail. And I sent bloody dozens of them overseas.
Fantastic.
The guidebook was like $49.99, and it cost me $63 to post the thing to Germany and everywhere.
But that's what you – if you're going to walk it, you need the book.
You certainly need that book. That was specifically designed for people, you know, how much to go up and down and where you can stay.
And getting your supplies. Yeah, no, this is inspiring the dream.
Mm.
And then the guidebook is the how-to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although I've never been near it, I've got a soft spot for it, made a lot of money.
Yeah, no, by it's standards. Very good. Now.
All right.
Okay, over you.
Okay. Adam Perry has written a book called Every Lake, and the title has a scary story. Now,
where's the lake in New Zealand?
Well, it's got to be Wakatapu or something, doesn't it?
All right, yeah. Looks like the Hokianga to me on the front, but it's too cold.
It looks cold as snow.
Yeah.
When it starts snowing in Hokianga.
Yeah, no, okay, well, I'll take that.
That's quite interesting. Well, when Alice was 15, her father killed Mia Haywood in their lakefront cottage before vanishing into the trees. At least that's what the locals think happened. More than a decade later, Alice has lost her job as a journalist. She's going through an expensive divorce, and she desperately needs to sell the boarded-up murder house. But before she can do that, she has to find out what really happens. Tall Pines still has its secrets. Postcard-perfect Otago landscape holds a deep divide between the residents and the rich holiday homeowners. She learns more than one crime is being covered up, and alibis are veil thin. The rumours that Alice's father still lives hidden in the trees surrounding the lake, and the closer she gets to the truth, the more deadly the situation becomes. So this is published by Eleanor Nunwin. I don't know much about Adam Perry at all, except that he lives with his family in Christchurch, a Bachelor of Broadcasting Communications, worked in radio advertising, and this is his debut novel. I'm drawn to the fact that friend of the firm, Charity Norman, has written a little piece for the cover, which is a vivid small-town thriller. So,
good luck to it.
Crime story. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and it's, hey, it's, there's no doubt we're going through a bit of a period now where our local authors are getting published. So nice to see.
Yeah. And it's published by Alan and Unwin. We'll come back to that in a second.
Son of Nobody, Jan Matau. Now, we all know him.
Because of the tiger.
The Life of Pi, which was, I'm just looking at my notes, he won the Booker with it.
Yes, he did.
This is his fifth book. He's written a book here that's kind of unique. If I just put it up to you, like half of it is a poem running across the top, and the other half is a narrative story. Is kind of the novelistic part of it. So you've got two parts to follow, and you can follow either the poem or the narrative bit. Now, That makes it interesting. It's not, it's been done before, but the idea is, so it's a novel about this poem, 30 fragments, very much of Troy. So we're back in Odysseus, and which is very much in the discussion these days because of the movie. Yeah. So two narrative strands. Pat Barker wrote a Troy story that I thought was really good.
Yeah.
After her World War One trilogy, this is full of kind of like these fragments. It's written in iambic pentameter, so it's nice on the ear.
The poem is.
Yeah. And it's got some salty songs and lots of jokes and puns and lots of vivid detail. It's kind of dark stuff, but it's also down with lower ranks. We've always had these stories told from the big people, you know, the semi-gods who were there, Achilles and Odysseus and whatever, Paris, I think, or whatever it is. So this is from the lower ranks, and you write down into the not so much the glamour, but this is the kind of blood and death side of it all. You know, and it's dark ending, you know, with the children being thrown off the walls of Troy and all that sort of business. But it sort of combines myth and history and documentary. So it's, you know, it's a big book. I think you'd probably find this in, you know, a lot of bookshops around the world. Elmo's?
Mm.
Yeah, so there it is. It's all about love and grief. Have we heard that story?
There's only one story.
There's only one. Love and grief. Anyway, that's the big literary book of the day. Continuing.
Well, continuing with our Alan and Unwin theme. So this is a book called The Nowhere Boy by Anne Cleary. And it is the winner of the Alan and Unwin Fiction Prize, which is something they award to the writer of a new book, of a first novel, annually. I think, I can't remember his name, the guy who wrote Highway One. I think he might have won it. For Michelle Hurley and the judges of the Alan and Unwin Aotearoa New Zealand Fiction Prize, I'm incredibly grateful to you for choosing my novel. I'll read you the synopsis.
Yeah.
Child disappears in broad daylight and no one sees a thing. Three-year-old Oliver, known as Appleman, vanishes from a remote car park while his young father, Scott, carries fishing gear down to the beach. When he returns, the car is empty. His son has vanished without trace. Appleman's mother, Faye, gets a call that shatters her life. Enraged with her ex, Scott, and drowning in her own guilt, she's pulled back into Scott's orbit as police launch a desperate search across a wild coastline and dense pine forest. So,
I like the context.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everybody's nightmare is to come back, you know, and find your children not there. Okay, it's
far from the search, a grieving woman convinces herself she's been given a second chance. Tessa has lost three babies, and the future she believed was hers. When she encounters a small, abandoned boy, she sees not a crime, but a miracle. She cannot surrender. As the hunt intensifies, her fragile fantasy of motherhood begins to unravel. This is the Shades of Light Between Oceans.
It does. It is, you know, the lighthouse and the boat rocking up with the little baby in it. Yeah. Yep. Okay. No.
This is my little test, which we can't, but I asked Michael before, how can you tell this is a New Zealand book?
Yeah, we studied every word about it, and we really came down to. Now this is why you are the master of quiz shows.
Yeah, it's because it's a little boy wearing red bands.
Oh no! Look, it's only us Kiwi readers are going to get that. A tiny short book. This one here, when I had to look up how to say it, Eoade.
Eoade, is that right?
That's right.
I hadn't thought of that. I was certainly not pronouncing it that way.
I'm pretty average on the pronunciation of some of these people, but Richard, I saw this in your bookshop, and I flicked it, and I thought, that's a great fun. And it was actually...
Is that the one with the line that says, which box do you tick if you really are a robot?
Exactly. And it's full of these little afterthoughts. And it's somebody who's sitting down or just capturing in their notebook all the little idiomatic phrases and then riffing off them.
Yeah.
No, not ripping them, riffing, yeah. Just making little jokes off it. Fun, entertaining, and there's a certain sort of person out there, a reader, who's this stuff really gets to. They just chuckle away. It is the TV detectives need, like we've got here today, TV detectives need a gimmick. Mine would be not caring who did it, you know, which is kind of, no, that's very good. So, Richard Ayoade's Eoade.
Okay, that makes sense.
You can find that at Elmo's. It's excellent book.
It's quite funny.
It's like a tennis match. I'm just volleying it back to you.
Okay. This one is more distinctly a New Zealand book because this is book three of the Bookshop Detectives by Gareth Ward and Louise Ward, who run Wardini Books in Havelock and Napier, I think.
I've been there and chatted to, is it Louise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been to see us as well. The Bookshop Detectives, Murder and Mojitos.
Well, it's a good combo.
Yeah. Booksellers Garth and Louise Sherlock. No relation to the authors. And the Cowardly Dog, Stevie, have been roped into hosting Murder and Mojitos, a glamorous Art Deco festival event, because they have an Art Deco festival, starring Cuba's Queen of Crime Fiction, Juana Herrera. Between flapper frocks, rooftop hijinks, and competitive cocktail shaking, it should all be the bookshop's biggest break yet. But when a kidnapping occurs, etc. So these are funny. This is almost the definition of cozy crime. But people like them. So it's...
Yeah, no,
it's a crime book, but nothing bad happens.
No, it's... they're becoming pretty famous in New Zealand. Well, I mean, these books sell.
Yeah.
You know, they're moving. So, and the fact that you can actually visit Havelock and chat to the authors,
yeah.
And they'll probably sell you and write you a nice little...
But I read you this bit before, but I think it was quite funny. About the authors, it says, Gareth and Louise Ward are the real-life owners of independent bookshop Wardini Books. Louise is known among the staff as fearless leader, and Gareth as a bit of a dick.
You know, any book that can make us laugh at on the final page has got it going. Getting into a sort of more, you know, I'm not sure how you, it's a health, I guess it's a health book, quite a substantial book, Dr. Tommy Wood, called The Stimulated Mind, and it's kind of the thesis of this book, well, the idea in this book is that our brain is like a muscle because it's about future-proof your brain from dementia and stay sharp at any age. And the idea is that as long as we exercise our mind, we've got a good chance of actually keeping, you know, dementia at bay. And one of the key things is to be a reader, which is what we're all about. And so, you know, it's having a book in your hip pocket or in your bag and always just engaging with words. It goes like, boost mental sharpness today and prevent cognitive decline tomorrow with science-backed strategies that will extend your brain's longevity beyond what you thought was possible. We take care of our hearts and joints as we age. Well, what about our brains? With people struggling to focus and dementia and Alzheimer's on the rise, this book dispels the myth that the brain is doomed to decline with age. And in fact, he goes, that a brain improves with age is the result not of expensive pills, but of discoveries or far-off discoveries or strict life optimizations, but rather the actions within our control, diet, sleep, and physical activity, social connection, and stress tolerance. And he introduces us to a groundbreaking model that describes what a brain needs to thrive for a lifetime. Stimulation, sleep, great diet. But that stimulation is where this book's really good. packed with insights and actionable science drawn from his research and his experience as a physician, a neuroscientist and performance coach. I thought this was a book for all of us. Beautiful summaries, you know, and subheadings to get your way through it. Very, very readable for a sort of health book, kind of top level readability. And I'm kind of interested in that stuff. As you find your memory and you know, you're going like, am I sharp or, you know, am I, you know, I am.
I am.
You know, but his, you know, this is an optimistic book. It's going, no. Do those little puzzle things. There are apps and all that sort of. Read, read different things.
Yeah.
Make sure your brain is operating in lots of new and interesting ways. I've got here, it's changed my thinking about aging. You know, I'm way more interested in it now than I ever was before.
What, an aging?
An aging, yeah, because you're kind of, you're at the pointy end now.
Yeah.
You know, I've done my 4,000 weeks. I'm now in the coda stage. And you're going like, if I'm investing in my, you know, physical health, I should also need to be thinking about my mental health. There it is, the stimulated mind.
One's not much good without the other.
Oh, no. And it's no guarantee, but the science is fascinating.
Mm.
And this is a very good, optimistic book. Dr. Tommy Wood, The Stimulated Mind. Let's begin that big stack of international crime work.
Well, I just want to talk one more piece about health advice, which I read somewhere, which
yes.
I thought was very, very encouraging. Apparently cortisol, there's a hormone that causes all sorts of problems. And there are two ways that you can deal with cortisol in your body. One is eat a lot of kale, and the other is pet dogs. So I vote for that.
I totally, you know, I live in a town which is full of dogs and dog walking people who all,
like,
the dogs love us and the people love us. So it's kind of like fun to walk around and chat to people with dogs.
Yes.
And pat them.
Yes.
Now, as we've got time, but we're going to be pretty sharp through the next six. What have we got?
Well, we don't have to get through them all. I just picked up – there's a hell of a lot of crime writers. Picked up a few just to let people know what's – well, I'll start with this one because I just took it out of the box today. So this is brand new, not really available till the 1st of August, but if you want one, we will sell you one. Steve Kavanagh, whose hero is – Eddie Flynn, who's...
Of which there are several.
There's several.
Now, he defines legal thrillers, doesn't he?
Yeah, because he used to be a crook.
Yeah, and so and now...
and he kind of behaves a bit like a crook, but he's a lawyer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's he's got the interesting mindset and pretty sharp legal thrillers.
Yeah, these are good.
Yeah, and now Gail is very keen on Steve Kavanagh.
Patrick Vanderpool, son of a billionaire, media mogul, destined for power, but the affair he's having could ruin everything. Vanessa Vanderpool, married to one of America's most influential men, that would be Patrick, has her own ambitions, but the affair he's having could ruin everything. When the other woman is found brutally murdered, there are only two suspects. One of them's guilty, but which? So, that's what that's about. It's called One of Us is Guilty, Steve Kavanagh.
The latest.
Very latest.
That'll be very good. Let's go into big-time politics now, but with a tiny book.
Yes.
Fight Oligarchy. I think you're on your bookshops?
Yeah, in fact, I think we sold one just before we left here.
Racing out of the bookshop, we could say then.
What did today?
This is a slim little book and could be read comfortably in an evening. I mean, it's a generous type. It's really an extended essay. That if it actually was printed in something, you know, like The Listener and all that, you'd get, you know, a lot of the key ideas pretty quickly. I loved it. Oligarchy, the idea of wealthy elites running a country. And what Bernie Sanders is unique in that he is an independent senator.
Yes, he is.
Which means, you know, he stands kind of almost alone, I think. I don't know how you get independent. Very, very few.
There's a couple in the Senate.
Yeah, and the House of Representatives.
Rhode Island or something.
You'd think you know, people being annoyed with the legacy parties might drift into it, but they're so big and powerful, the legacy parties.
He tried to get the Democratic nomination.
Yeah, no, he lines up with the Dems.
Yeah.
But it's a stunning indictment of the president and the whole idea is of billionaires is an anathema to him, and the idea that we even tolerated the fact that these people could develop and also then have such a big, massive influence on our lives. They just, you know, as he points out, you know, they own the media, they own everything.
They own bits of the media, and then they consolidate it with the bits they don't own. One of Trump's mates trying to buy the company that runs CNN so they can shut it down, I guess.
Well, it's all it's and explain these super PACs, which are sort of organisations for running money for candidates.
Where it comes from,
and it's from these from wealthy oligarchs.
Yeah.
But if you don't toe the line, then the super PAC comes in and just takes your contender, the person who's opposing you, floods them with money, and you disappear because the media won't report you. You just become a non-person. Mm. And also then he goes on.
Citizens United, I don't think. That was the thing that went to the Supreme Court where they took away the anybody's right to know where the money comes from.
I know, which is weird. And he then talks about his, you know, fight oligarchy tour he went on, which was across America, which was, well, and he goes, but where do we go from here? And he goes, it's kind of like ideas which would resonate with any country. And I was going, this works for us. Raise new revenue by making the wealthy and large corporation pay their fair share of taxes. Cut military spending. Make sure that the working class benefits from new technology.
Big trick.
Guarantee basic human rights. Enact Medicare for all. The idea, this is the only powerful country that has no, you know, medical rights for everybody. It's a money thing. Provide quality education for all, affordable housing. Have you heard this before? Improve wages and benefits for American workers. Raise the minimum wage to a living wage. Guaranteed paid family and medical leave. We just had that in our own, you know, last night's news. Expand Social Security. And the final one, encourage employee ownership. Very union, basic, the worker's guy. Terrific little book. And so today, you know, and lots of insights into the president that you don't really ever get to hear about. Super book. Okay.
Okay. Let's run through a few of these.
Run through these, yep.
So we'll start with James Ellroy, LA Confidential and all that sort of stuff, written quite a few. This is a book called Red Sheet. Set in L.A. in the 60s. It's late October 1962. Cuban Missile Crisis has just concluded. The Ruskies blinked and pulled their ICBMs out of Cuba. Attorney General Robert Kennedy fears reprisals. He orders a red probe and puts the LAPD on the job. So this is about hunting for communists in L.A. in the early 60s. Murder on Halloween night may link to ex-VP and current gubernatorial candidate Richard Nixon. So,
and we have a detective who's going to unpack it.
Playboy King Hugh Hefner's along for the ride.
A lot of his books have been made into very, very good movies. So, that'll be fun to see how this one rolls.
I don't know who the detective is. As I say, I mean, just all I've done.
Yeah, no.
A couple of recent stuff pulled.
I've added that to my list. It's a big book.
It is a big book, so, but you get.
But I also know
500 odd pages.
Yeah, but I also know he's sharp. There's a lot of great, very good dialogue, and lots of it. So that speeds things up.
Yep.
Okay, and the next.
Okay, Stewie McBride, Stuart McBride. I suppose we should be a bit more respectful. So these are tough Scottish crime thrillers.
You look like you're getting some value for your money there too.
Yeah, this one's nearly 600 pages.
He's the Aberdeen boy, is he?
I thought they were Glaswegian, but they might be further north.
I got a feeling he's the Aberdeen one because
Blood, Rust and Steel.
Ian Rankin Road owns the twin cities, but this is the Aberdeen. Anyway.
The following is not based on a true story, and anyone who says otherwise is lying. Acting Detective Inspector Roberta Steele has never been shy, but she's finally retiring. that's quite clever. After 30 years of policing Aberdeen's underbelly, you're quite right. She's all set for her twilight years to feature gardening gloves, afternoon tea, crossword puzzles and shouting at the telly.
Oh, my God, this sounds like Richard Osman's with his, little club of people,
So when a body turns on a wheelie bin, it looks like an excellent way to round off her career and go out with a bang. Only the northeast of Scotland isn't finished with her yet. So, loyal audience for...
Right, just do it.
Bride. Lying beside you, Michael Rowbottom, Australian crime writer.
He has written a couple of crackers. They've really got some attention early on. And is he sustaining that at a pretty high level? He's a big festival guy. Mm. He talks about his books all around the world.
There's a lot of them. Joe Lachlan series, the Cyrus Haven series, and other fiction. So that's what, I don't know, 10, 13, 18. So this is book 19. And this is Cyrus Haven.
It's interesting. I'm pretty sure I read one of his or two of his like 20 years ago and kind of enjoyed it, but never kicked on like, oh, I've got to read. You know how some writers, Michael Connelly or something like that, you can't wait for the next book sort of thing. He wasn't one of those for me.
It says, 20 years ago, Cyrus Haven's family was murdered. Only he and his brother survived. Cyrus because he hid, Elias because he was the killer. Now Elias is being released from a secure psychiatric hospital and Cyrus, a forensic psychologist, must decide if he can forgive the man who destroyed his childhood.
Nothing
taking
like
a new thriller from the number one best-selling author. Again, we haven't had it long. Sold 6 million books. I think it would be a good read.
The sibling rivalry, you never know where that's going to roll. We're almost there. We're doing good.
Yeah, we are. Okay.
I've got one more and you've got two. So there we go.
I'll go really quickly.
Okay, me too.
I'll just tell you what they are. Karen Slaughter, written heaps, but this is the one.
Is that the one with the great sort of Zen diagram to explain who's what series and whatever? Is that that one?
No, that's not that one.
Okay. It might be the next one.
Welcome back to North Falls, small town, big secrets. House at 1601 Iris Drive looks like any other in a quiet residential street, but rumours are rife about the Vickery family and what goes behind closed doors.
Now, is she Brit or US?
She's American.
Okay.
Best crime writers in America, crime fiction is finest. That's Michael Connelly. He should know.
Yep.
Fiction doesn't get any better than this. Jeffrey Deaver, I'd follow her anywhere. Gillian Flynn, it's in a class of her own from the West Australian. Well, who cares about that? But so she's good.
She gets a lot of ticks.
Yeah. Your turn.
50 Sentences That Make Life Easier by Karen Kuschek.
Thank you very much.
That would probably be in there, yes. And it's the phenomenal international bestseller. This book was huge in Germany, but now there's an English version of it out. I liked it. Karen is a sort of performance coach where she works with kind of like people in media and people in business who are kind of in sort of situations where they've got to – they're handling a lot of decision making, but they've also got to act in a way and the way they speak is kind of really critical. And what she's done is listen to a lot of interesting things over her career and go, interesting sentences. And then she gets the people to practice them and say them with confidence and sincerity and, with belief. I liked it. And like I take an example, thanks for the compliment. in our lives, we get complimented occasionally for doing something or thanked for something like that. I've always been a bumbling idiot through my life with that and sort of, you know, looked down at my shoes and, no, it wasn't me. You know, it was like, you know, and sort of like...
Just an accident.
Yeah, just, you know, and that was nothing. And, you know, it was everything because you'd poured, you know, and I didn't, you know, like that sort of stuff. But if I just learned to say, thank you for the compliment, it's such... you know, a great phrase and said with confidence and just wait and pause and think, and then we're moving on without all the sort of bumbling stuff that I've, you know, I'm not sure what this means. The idea of, you know, when it's, you know, something's happening to actually state quite clearly, I'm not, you know, is kind of, I like that. I think this issue is yours, you know, more than mine, you know, why is, you know, that the, this says more about you than me, because often people, you know, they something's coming across and you, it's them, and you're going, why am I in this kind of debate? And it goes on and on. It sounds logical, but my intuition suggests something else. You know, where, yeah, it's, you know, that sort of, I've changed my mind. You know, that just, you know, I lost track of time.
I say that all the time.
Yeah, we often, you know, like the traffic, this, and we give it a reason for why it is, but just I lost track of time. It's finished, and we're just moving on. The interesting book, I made in my notebooks that I keep, I made a list of a few things I liked. I think everybody would find a sentence or two, but the little anecdotes that go with it and how it emerges and why she thinks they're quite powerful in the 50 sentences. And it's a lot. This is a businessy type of book. So where somebody is, you know, there's a lot of interactions in decision making. Very good. Well, we're getting there. There is certainly time to look at that last book.
Oh, just really, really quickly. I only brought this along. This is a book called Hide and Seek by someone called Søren Vistrup, who I don't know, just to prove that the Scandinavians are, in fact, still writing crime thrillers. Although this guy is Danish. Most of them seem to be Swedish or Icelandic.
They're pretty good, though, aren't they?
They are. You know, because they've got such long winters, all they've got to do is sit down and think up terrible ways to kill each other.
And also, it's kind of... it's for some reason, Scandinavia is kind of a little bit off the beaten track, even though it's kind of in Europe, but people don't, it's not such a well-visited place.
Yeah, so...
Scandi. Classic.
Another more than 500 pages, get you through a couple of days.
I know, it's a bit scary, the size of print, you know, when we stack them all up there and you just... we all need to read a little faster at times, especially crime writing, when we can blast along. Mm.
Well, it depends. See, some of them, every word counts because that's where the clue is.
I know. And this show actually forces me to read, I think, sometimes too fast. And sometimes, you know, I look at a book at the end, I go, I could have slowed down there. And I'm not even sure if I've kind of got my handle on it, I've missed stuff. Yeah. And life's too short. I don't know. Are you a rereader?
No, not really.
I'm not either. And so I really get one shot at it.
I read all the I had a little in hospital just with a small operation on my hand, so nothing serious. Yeah. And I was a bit stuck for a day or two, so I reread all the Hornblower books.
Oh, yeah. And C.S. Foster's, yeah.
C.S. Foster, yeah. And I hadn't read them since I was a kid, so that was...
I love them.
Yeah.
That brings us to the conclusion of the July Book Lovers Wire Wrapper, and we look forward to meeting you in a month's time.
Mm-hmm.
We will certainly be... we will have, once again, another big collection of the books that are moving in the valley. And they'll be on the edge of spring almost.
We'll be not too long before Daffodil Day in Carterton.
And it may not be
Father's Day.
Quite as sharply cold as it is at the moment, which is...
Bloody not be.
But it's good for our reading. Because it's time of the book is where winter really shines.
Yes.
Anyway, it's good afternoon from myself and
good night from me or something.